With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I got into this book last night. I'm probably 80% of the way through it last. And it's really good. Steve Murphy and Javier, these guys, Pena, were the two leads, the co-investigators on the Pablo Escobar. And they couldn't have come from different backgrounds. I think Javier was a prison guard. That's how he kind of started out. And then Steve came from a background out of Tennessee up to West Virginia and became a cop. And somehow, through just the way life works, you meet one person, you go to the next place, you get another job, you dislike this, you like that, and suddenly you find yourself in South America in the most dangerous situation you could possibly imagine. We don't even understand how cutthroat, bloodthirsty, the money, the rage, the revenge that filled Pablo Escobar made him the most dangerous man on the planet at one point.
Born in Tennessee and raised in Princeton, West Virginia, a graduate of Bluefield State College with a degree in criminal justice, he joined the DEA in the mid-80s, working in Miami for 4 years before being transferred to Bogota, Colombia, where along with fellow agent Javier Pena, he was one of the men who brought down one of the most infamous drug lords of all time. And now he tells the story in his new book, Manhunters, How We Took Down Pablo Escobar. Please welcome retired DEA agent Steve Murphy.
Hey, Steve, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Johnny, thank you very much.
Yeah, hey, this book is like, it is so over the top. It reads not like a fiction, but just there's so much in this, so much detail. Everything that built up to this Pablo Escobar, it just seems impossible that two guys could have such different lives but become so engrossed in the idea and in the world of drugs and money that most don't survive. I mean, Miami in the 80s, George Jung, that we knew with the movie Blow, you talk about, he brought in 80% of the cocaine at that point.
Well, he was getting it from Pablo Escobar.
Right.
Pablo's the man.
Right. So Pablo was rising to power at that point. Then there was the, and just a side note, but there was the lady drug dealer in Miami that was having everybody killed. She was pretty terrifying in herself.
Griselda Blanco.
Yeah.
She's known as the Black Widow because she kept killing her husband.
Yeah. And so you guys meet, and you can only trust each other because there's so much to this story. To try to get it in an interview is impossible. So I'm really fast-forwarding to the Miami situation, and then when you finally get down to South America, you realize you're in a world where Pablo has bought everybody off, government officials. He's offered to pay off the national debt of Colombia. He has got billions and billions of dollars. And the other thing he has on his side is the people. There were a lot of people who thought he was a good guy because he'd build a soccer stadium or a playground, or he'd give people money, and so he'd try to play the role of Robin Hood so that they wouldn't give him up.
You know what? You're hitting the nail on the head on every point there, Johnny, and that's the purpose of the book, and we also have a speaking business where we travel around the world telling the true story. That's what it's all about with us, telling the truth.
Why would you do it? I mean, that's the one thing I come back to. That level of DEA agent, when you're under and you're in some other country, you're surrounded by informants, people that have already rolled, people that, to save their own families, would gladly give you up if necessary. And you can trust nobody, maybe just one guy, Javier, and why would you put yourself in that world?
You know what? And it's not just me. It's not just Javier. Every DEA agent I know would volunteer and raise their hand to go do the same thing if they thought they could go after that level of traffic. Because this is one dedicated agency. I'm not kidding you. But, you know, it was 4 years in Miami and had a blast down there. It's very dangerous, very violent. But, you know, the good Lord gave me the capability to enjoy that kind of work. And I thought, well, talk to my wife. And I said, hey, what's the next most exciting thing we can do? Let's go to Colombia. Believe it or not, it's her idea.
Well, then the fact that that your girl was like, sure, no problem. And what did she do for a living prior to that?
She's a registered nurse, and she's, you know what, she really likes the trauma and the emergency room, the gory stuff, which you know, that just kind of makes me sick to my stomach. But that's why we get along. She's an adventuresome person.
Well, I know Jake told you about a few years back. We were riding to Mazatlan, and we had stopped in Chihuahua for the night, and then we'd left the next day, and we stopped to get gas about 100 miles south of Chihuahua, and all the SUVs were in the parking lot. The girl could speak great English. I asked her what was happening. She said her parents had sent her to college in the States, and she'd come back to run the business, and then she just, in the softest possible voice, she looked at me, and I barely caught. She goes, "They think you're DEA," and then she didn't say another word to me, and I can tell you, like, I've been in enough business in my life that I understood exactly, and these guys were, you know, they were pressed well. They were definitely, like, these were not working hands. You know, you could see who these guys were. And they're all, you know, kind of mumbling and staring. And I realized we did look like DEA. I have long hair and a ponytail. Bob looks like he ate Serpico. And we're on motorcycles for no apparent reason outside of Chihuahua where nobody rides. And it scared. And
tell me that story. My question for you is, what's wrong with you, John?
Yeah, I know, right? Well, you know, it's not like, it's, we were just headed to Mazatlan, you know, and I know it could be rough, but we were, you know, clearly it's not a good decision and bad things could absolutely happen. We just saw that happen with that poor family on the side of the road. They killed them all.
Oh, horrible. It's horrible.
You, but I'll tell you, as an adult, that's the only time I can tell you for sure that I felt abject, genuine fear and went, man, this is bad. And that's no joke. 100 miles at 100 miles an hour, looking in that rearview mirror the whole time, ripping.
God bless you. That's the right thing to do. Get the heck out of Dodge.
Well, yeah, you're unarmed. You have nothing. You have nothing on you to defend yourself. And, you know, not that you could anyway, but what are you going to do? And you know those guys. They're going to beat on you until you just give them a fake confession, and they kill you anyway.
Exactly. That's a shame, isn't it? I mean, yeah. And that just shows the level of violence that's associated with drug trafficking, the terroristic activities. You know, we credit Pablo Escobar with being the world's first narco-terrorist, and that's just carrying over. It's just the heinous crimes that these people will stoop to. It's just, it's almost unspeakable. It's unbelievable that things like that go on in our world.
Well, and to that, I mean, these guys, and you know this, but the rest of the world may not. Like, when you're an agent, you and all your friends and your brothers in the agency, you know, these guys will try to research who your family is back in the United States and kill everybody that you care about.
Yeah. Well, you know what? My family's from Tennessee and West Virginia. They might have a fight on their hands.
but did you have to have that discussion?
When that sound rolls over.
Did you have to have that discussion with your relatives and go, hey, listen, you have to be aware that I'm in a situation. Obviously, you can't tell them everything, but did you have to warn them?
Well, you know, they knew what was going on, but, you know, this is a little bit of a trade secret. Everywhere we lived was DEA. Nothing was ever in my name. It was always in my wife's name because nobody knew who Connie Murphy was.
Right.
So, which I probably shouldn't have just put on the radio.
Well, look, Steve, this book is so good, you guys. It's called Manhunters. If you watch Narco, you can see the two guys, Steve and Javier, are in that, you know, that show. This book, though, is their words, both of them, describing the same situation all the way through to the end of Escobar. And there's so many twists and turns and so many offshoot stories from, you know, the CIA being involved to the Tom Cruise Made in America movie that, you know, across the Blow movie with Johnny Depp. All those names start to intertwine inside your book because they were all together, weren't they?
They were. You know what? And we've had the honor of meeting some of these folks, the real life people that were portrayed by, like Johnny Depp played George Jones, who was Donnie Brasco.
Oh, sure.
You know, we've gotten the opportunity to meet these people, and they're true heroes. They're, you know, We don't subscribe to that title of hero, but there are heroes out there.
Yep. Well, listen, Steve, once they run you through this publicity cycle, and I know they're running you station to station, and we, you know, if we can stop down and talk for like 30 minutes, I want to go back to this book with you and really take people on a walk through what it was like to go from West Virginia to Miami in the 80s, the cocaine world, then jumping over to South America to right up against Pablo Escobar in 93.
I'd love to do that, Johnny, because it's a very interesting story, I think. Actually, I think it's boring, but the rest of the world seems to think it's interesting.
Listen, in a bar, when everybody's telling their stories, look, you win. With the exception of Buzz Aldrin walking in at that moment, you win.
thank you, brother.
Jake, let's definitely get him back. See, there's never enough time. You don't understand how much is in this book. So these guys, it takes from their childhood, mm-hmm, to becoming a cop, to him being a prison guard, to going through college, all the fights, the weird things that happen when you're a rookie, to why you made your decision to join the DEA, to end up in Miami with a wife. And, I mean, now you're really in all kinds of business. Because now you're really vulnerable. You have a loved one with you. She moved to South America with him. I'm like,
that's her idea, he says.
Yeah, of course. So every moment of every day, you're traveling in a car that has to be fortified with steel plates, windows that can't roll down, bulletproof glass. You have got to be vigil and looking over your shoulder at every moment. Hell, one night, Steve was in his car. He and his wife went out to get some dinner at this little place in Colombia. And it was a back road place. They're going to pick up some roasted chicken and potatoes and take it back to their apartment and eat it. A car comes zinging past him, slams on the brakes. There's almost a collision. They're like, oh, here it comes. And there's three men get out. Clearly, they're all armed. They have pistols sticking out of their waistbands. Now they come up and they're telling him to get out of the car. He's not going to get out of the car. He's not going to open the door because his wife's vulnerable. They can't get in. The tires can't be blown. The doors can't be penetrated. The glass can't be shot. It's a good fortress they're in. But he's trying to get somebody on the radio to bring the margarita. The margarita is an Uzi. So he's got a pistol, but it's just three guys, his pistol against three pistols. He's outnumbered. So finally, a wife of a DEA agent hits him back on the radio and goes, what's going on? Nobody's picking up their radio. And he explains, hey, this is the problem. I need the margarita. Now that comes screaming up the street about 8-10 minutes later. All of a sudden, guns are drawn. There's three guys. There's this guy coming up. He's starting to come back out. One of the local federales comes rolling in. And it turns out these three knuckleheads weren't drug dealers. They weren't hitmen. They were three young military a-holes who were drunk and road raging and wanted to kick someone's ass.
Wrong move.
Yeah, they almost died.
Didn't realize they were about to get the margarita.
Yeah.
Yeah, your last one.
Yeah. So then, of course, then this guy, and Steve tells a great story in the book about just chewing their ass one side and down the other. He does not call their superior officer. He lets it all go there. But I guess he lit them up for 30 minutes until they were begging him not to call the officer.
When you can just, how great would it be to keep hearing his stories? Because he's just so easygoing about, and it's just so, as he said, it's boring to him, but you guys seem to like it, you know. Let me tell you another one. Oh my God, I have an ulcer hearing you.
It is just, I've only scraped like less than 1% because we were at such short time. But the drug deals, we talked about the Black Widow in Miami. Mm. You know, these guys were really, they're just young and on fire and having the time of their lives. So you can read it in the book, like they're enjoying this. This is a fantastic day. One second they're on a $1 million boat. Then they're pretending they're sailors. Then they're taking out guys with 100 kilos of cocaine, arresting everybody. They're in helicopters. They're in charter boats. They're in super fast cars. I mean, they're Sonny and Crockett from Miami Vice.
Stuff you can't even hardly capture in a movie.
No.
Not the realness of it.
They're talking about walking into apartments that literally had $50 million in small bills. It filled the entire apartment. Not hundreds, 20s and 50s and fives. Like, they were talking about these rooms that were filled floor to ceiling, wall to wall, with actual cash bundled. And they would just take it all. It was just nothing but mayhem. And it was just a wild west because cocaine was suddenly super available. And it was all because of George.
Yeah. You know,
George Jung, who played by Johnny Depp in Blow. Now, after they kind of get all that worked out, they decide, well, we're going to go after Escobar. That's how that happened, because Escobar was the supplier. Mm-hmm. And, these guys ruled with an iron fist. If you didn't do what Escobar wanted, you were a cop. If you were a storekeeper, if you were a politician, you were just gone. You were just dead.
Yeah, they just
cut your head off and mailed it to your family, threw it in the street. They wanted everybody to see it. They'd just stop a bus of people, cut everybody's heads off, throw it in the street if the city wasn't cooperating. It is over the top, as dangerous and as horrifying and as scary as anything we can't imagine that in our country.
No, I just thought to myself, God, I love it here.
The lawlessness, all you had to do was float money and everything was fine. The only reason Escobar ever went down was because of the importing drugs to America. He was great in South America. Mm-hmm. He was fantastic. Colombia, like nobody was going to ever.
Yeah, because even when he went to,
he owned the government.
Yeah, because he escaped prison.
Sure,
but even when he went to prison, like it was his own little. He made a deal with them of like, well, I'll stay in this.
He built his own prison.
He built his own beautiful prison to stay in.
He really did. This. The only thing that ever brought him down was our government. Our DEA went in and shut him down because of the influx of drugs into our country. We're just destroying lives. And the violence that came with it was unbelievable. But, you know, when I tell you that story about, you know, being past Chihuahua, and, you know, I don't know who those guys were, but they were not normal guys. They were not farmers. When we stopped at that gas station, the one thing I can tell you, Bob can tell you in all certainty, as soon as you pulled up, you realized, why would there be three very clean black SUVs, nice tires, nice wheels, not trucks, not janky cars. And then we walk in, and everybody looks great. Creased jeans, belt buckles, shiny boots, nice shirts. Everybody looks nice. And I'm like, this is not your normal farmland of Mexico. And when she just, it's that whisper, I can tell you, as an adult, it's probably the only time I've ever been like weak in the knees. Like, you really went, oh, come on, God damn it. This is how it goes. This is how it ends for me. Like, that genuine fear in your heart.
At the same point, I don't know why she did. Thank God she did. I mean, to take a chance like that, in a way. Because I always think of that, too. Like, why? But
well, clearly they hadn't planned anything, but she could overhear them. I don't speak Spanish. And right. Just, you know.
But thank you. Thank you, lady.
Yeah. But I tell you, I really thought, and the whole time you think 100 miles is fast. It's not fast enough.
No.
Not when you keep looking in that rearview mirror. It's not
enough, man.
No.
It's and you realize, I can't outrun this car. That car is faster than this Harley. There's nothing I could do. Like, if they decided, it's all kind of futile. Like, it's
you're
just,
outside.
Well, you also understand, where are you going to go?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
there's nowhere you can go.
All I can do is try to make distance, because where am I
going to
go?
You going to the police station? Like, it's a bad Craigslist?
No. Where is it? We're in the middle of nowhere.
Yes. They probably know them.
Yeah.
Everything's bad about that.
And so we burned it. But that was the same day that we got, and I guess because we were riding so fast, early to the base of the Sierra Madres, and it was only 60 or 70 miles over the top of the mountains. It was only 6:30 in the afternoon, or in the evening. And I'm like, hey, we can be in Mazatlan tonight. Now we save ourselves an extra morning ride, everything. Let's go. So we start up now. We've already had this day. That was the beginning of the infamous 7 hours to go 60 miles. Yeah. We got stuck in a tropical storm in the Sierra Madres, coming over the top of it. And it literally, I never got past second gear, and I stayed in first gear for 90% of the time. You couldn't drop the visor on your helmet because it was so warm and foggy, because it was a tropical storm. Everything fogged up, and then the clouds were sitting on the mountain, mudslides. People tie their livestock up on the road. Logging trucks are coming at you, knocking your mirrors. They come by because that's the only way they can come by. It's a it's a cliff on your left side. And on your right side is a wall. There's nowhere to stop. Nowhere you could pull it. We'd have just pulled over, dumped the bikes over, and laid there in our rain gear all night. But happily. I would have been happy to do that. There was nowhere you could get off the road. And it took us, then it was 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning when we finally pulled into our hotel at Mazatlan. That was a day.
You've already decided you're going back when?
Well, we did go back and do the whole Cabo San Lucas, but that's a completely different part of it.
Yes.
I don't think we're going back.
Bob may be different on it, but...
Bob was the first one to say, I'm never going back.
Oh, I wouldn't have no doubt.
And then, just because we're super geniuses, after we left Mazatlan after a day, after the exhaust got ripped off his bike, after a guy named Ernesto welded it back on for $50 because he's awesome, and I hope he lives forever and has a
little
beautiful
angel.
Life. We rode back, and we had to cross over. We wanted to go through San Antonio, but that meant we had to go through Nuevo Laredo, which had a sign outside it at the time that said, caution, city ahead. Their own government warned you about Nuevo Laredo. Nuevo Laredo's bad, bad, bad.
When you have as a city sign...
No, it's for real. Like, they'll tell you right now, never go to Nuevo Laredo. They kidnap people all the time and kill them. I mean, it happens all the time to Americans down there.
Jesus, if you're born into that. Ugh.
So, but we're coming from the backside. So we're not coming into Nuevo Laredo from the American side. We're coming out. So we just literally lock it all down, leather. You can't even tell if we're American or not. We're both full gloves. Everything is covered. Full face helmets. Just trying to keep going. And I was like, we're not stopping. No matter what, we're not stopping. We're going to keep going right angles. And we're just not going to get locked into any kind of a traffic. So we hit it. We start splitting the lane until they drew down on us from the American side. And we were like, oh, I'm sorry. I just played dumb. I thought motorcycles could split lanes here. And they're like, no, get in line. So you just kind of zip. Now I'm in American territory. But that's how we got back to the States on those motorcycles.
Jesus.
Yeah. Nothing bad happened to us till we got to San Antonio at a nice hotel and somebody stole the gas tanks, the extra gas off our motorcycles in the parking garage.
Welcome home there, gringo.
I'm not kidding a little bit. The only thing bad that really actually happened to us, not imagined happened to us, was we had extra gas cans strapped to the bikes, and somebody in the parking garage of a nice hotel on the Riverwalk stole the goddamn things off our motorcycles.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.